It's the Morning Show on 95.3 WBCK. And here's Tim Collins.
Good morning to you. It's 8:07 at 95.3 WBCK. Usually on Thursday, we talk with the guys from U.S. Staffing, but they're going to take another day off and be back with us next week as we talk about employment in America, which, basically has been pretty good. Got to admit, it really takes a load off your mind when you know that there are jobs out there and that most people are working and that if something happened, you could probably find another job and that employers are probably glad to have a decent employee and not look for stupid reasons to make changes when there's nobody out there waiting in line to take your job. Basically, it's pretty good right now in America. We'll be talking about that with the folks from U.S. Staffing a little bit more next week. Leslie Walsh will be along from Binder Park Zoo with some zoo year resolutions for us. But right now we are going to talk with artist, writer, cultural and media observer Rick Elkins, author of three books, including Turn Right at Lost, Recalculating America, which is an interesting thing. July of 2016, he predicted that we'd elect a conservative political outsider to rein in runaway spending and treat an epidemic of apathy and narcissism. And now he's got a new book out. It's called Trump's Reckoning, Bulldozing Progressivism, Rebuilding Americanism. And we say good morning, Rick Elkin. Nice to have you with us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Tim.
You're in California?
Yes, I am.
You're a conservative living in California?
I know. It's tough.
It can't be Southern.
Species.
It can't be Southern.
I live in San Diego area.
Wow. So you're a rare animal out there.
well, you know what? I began my young life in college. I was a liberal. I was, like everybody else at the time during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. I had the beard and the long hair, and it was kind of wild and crazy. But as the years have gone by, I've become much, much more conservative. And one of the reasons I started writing was 9/11. It really brought home the fact that I'm very patriotic and I believe in America and I believe in the whole concept of Americanism. And, that's becoming less and less popular. And so one of the things I wanted to do is, maybe stir people up to think a little bit more about how lucky we are to live where we do, live in the way we do, and enjoy the freedoms that we have. And this is something that I think becomes easy to take for granted. And so that's really what motivated me to start writing. And then this book is about what I think Donald Trump is going to be confronted with, he's being confronted with, and that is, first of all, I think it's a miracle that he got elected, and that's a big part of the book is what an amazing story that is. In the book, I say that it was like pitching five major league no-hitters in a row for a guy like Donald Trump to ascend to the most powerful position in the world. But
well, let's take that point. Let's take that point first, Rick. That it was a miracle he got elected, and pretty much everybody I know says, well, he got elected because a lot of stupid people that know nothing voted for him, and then he cheated us out of the popular vote with this electoral college thing, and he doesn't deserve to be president. Let's take that point.
Well, I think that doesn't give voters enough credit. I mean, out here in California, we could make the same point that we can't understand why we are where we are with the regime that we have in charge here in California. But the fact is voters have a certain amount of wisdom. And over the years, it's proved to be pretty impressive. And I think one of the things that Donald Trump proved was that there was an awful lot of discontent with the status quo in America, and voters decided it was time to make a big change. And so what they did was they elected a builder. And one of the reasons I feel qualified to even talk about all this is because I have spent 30 years of my life in the building industry. And it's a unique industry, and it attracts unique people, and it takes unique skills to do what builders do. And I think putting a builder in charge of our country was probably one of the wisest things voters ever did.
Well, when you look at some of the other people that we put in charge and what their qualifications were, I kind of tend to agree with you. I mean, in fact, here in Michigan, we put a businessman in charge of our governorship for 8 years, and our economy did very well under that and actually had quite the turnaround. A lot of people criticize Governor Snyder, but he was not your average politician, and his background was in business, and I think we saw that.
Well, Trump's reckoning is that being a builder, he is an outsider. He does do things differently than typical politicians do, and it's going to create problems for him. And, you know, we're at that point right now with the government shutdown. But at the same time, one of the things about builders is they're super optimists. You know, once they decide they're going to build something, they realize it takes one brick at a time. And I think this is something that people fail to notice, that Trump has been very persistent about his promises, and he's just chipping them off one at a time, trying to, you know, complete his project. And that's to restore pride in America, our leadership in the world, our patriotism. And, of course, our economy, which I think has probably come around a lot faster than even he thought it would. And I think you can attribute that to the fact that we have somebody with a positive attitude in charge, and then a lot of the regulations and things of that nature that he's managed to put aside. It's untied the hands of our economy and allowed businesses to grow.
Do you think he made a mistake saying that he was going to build this wall and make Mexico pay for it?
Well, obviously not, because he got elected.
Well, that's true.
But
now it's being thrown in his face. He said Mexico would pay for it.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I mean, his opponents are going to throw everything they can think of in his face. And every time he says something that he can't stand behind, is, you know, fodder for that, and I think that's a pretty good example of that. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I think about Trump is that he hasn't given up on the wall. And when people, you know, the media likes to portray him as a liar. And I say, well, wait a minute. You know, first of all, he made a bunch of promises during the campaign, and the fact is that he's keeping those. So I think that's kind of evidence that he's not really a liar. Now, does he lie occasionally? Well, I think he's pretty inarticulate many times. Sometimes he says things that he probably shouldn't say. But that's what I think people like about him, is that he isn't a typical politician who, you know, pre-analyzes everything he says and has a reason for everything he says. Sometimes he just kind of lets his emotions speak for him, and people like that. And I think that's something refreshing.
I love that press conference before Christmas, or it was an appearance with Pelosi and what's his name, Schumer, and Pelosi's kept. Well, I don't know if public forum is the place for this discussion. And he's like, no, I think this is great. Let's let everybody see everything. But the way she operates is, you know, in the shadows, behind closed doors, get somebody else to do the dirty work and all this stuff. I mean, he
was criticized for that. And yeah. I think it was interesting, because really what it did was expose her hypocrisy. Out of one side of her mouth, she was talking about transparency and how the Democrats would bring that back, while on the other side of her mouth, she was saying, well, don't you think we should have these discussions behind closed doors?
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes Trump is really sneaky about the way he gets other people to say things that they probably didn't really want to say. And I think that's exactly one of the reasons he was so effective in the debates during the campaign, is that oftentimes he would literally trap people into speaking the truth when they really didn't want to.
You know, I heard somebody, well, Sean Hannity said this yesterday, and you know, I don't often agree with Sean Hannity quite as much as this statement, but he said, and I've heard him say it before, and I've heard others say it, Trump could cure cancer tomorrow and give every man, woman, and child in this country $1 million, and they would still hate him.
Well, I think there's a lot going on there that it's too easy to just blame, you know, one thing or another. We could blame the media. You know, we can blame Democrats. We can do that. But I think there's a lot happening. One of the things I've characterized in my book is what I call the Franken media. You know, we often talk about the mainstream media, but I don't think that really is a wide enough net. The Franken media is a monster made up of a whole bunch of different disciplines. Obviously, you have the television news media and even the radio news media, but you have newspapers, you have magazines, but more importantly, you have academia. And people ask me all the time, well, why do you think so many people, particularly in California, for example, are leaning left? And I said, well, it's really pretty simple. There's only one way that you can move large groups of people politically, and that's through a very organized campaign. And there's only one way that that can be done in America, and that's through a coalition of what I call the Franken media. And it starts with academia. When I was in college, and I hate to admit this, but this was back in the 60s, that trend was starting then. I had several Marxist professors. And that's one of the reasons I started moving more and more to the right, because it just seemed wrong to me that these people were standing in front of a bunch of, you know, young students and proselytizing leftism. And that was back in the 60s. So this idea that our college campuses have been overrun by leftist professors, it's not just a conspiracy theory. It's not paranoia. It's a fact. And I think it's pretty obvious when you look at how many young politicians are so Marxist in their thinking. Where did they learn this stuff? And I think that explains one of the reasons that you see so much of this. Those recent stories about how students have been surveyed, and you know, 50 or 60% of them think socialism is where we should go with our country. Well, something's really wrong if that's what they think, because they have obviously been terribly misinformed, and I think it starts in our college campuses, and this is something that very few people want to confront because it's an unmanageable problem. And then it feeds our media people are all graduates.
Yeah, they all go to college for journalism and come out of that particular you know, incubator or whatever you want to call it.
Exactly.
You know, I watched, you know, we have the nightly news on one of the major networks quite often, not for my benefit. I can't stand it. But I'll listen to a reporter on the White House beat, and probably in the span of a minute or two, I'll hear 10, 15 things that are obviously editorial slants with their own opinion injected into the story. And, you know, talk radio is one thing. That is opinion. But these are supposed to be the hard fact reporters that are giving us all the facts so that we can decide for ourselves. They slant everything, but yet the people who agree with them don't hear it. You can't convince them that the liberal media is liberal. You can't convince them that the media is biased.
Well, I think this is an insidious disease, and oftentimes people can be very, very sick and not know that they are, and their lives go on, and for all intents and purposes, they're functioning at a very high level, and they don't realize that they have a problem. And I think this is kind of one of the problems that we have in our country, you know, causes us, we talk about how we're so divided. And, you know, part and parcel of this is the explosion of media access where, you know, with all the cable channels now, there's hundreds and hundreds of choices for people to make to access information. And, you know, they talk about people living in a bubble or insulating themselves from contrary opinion. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. None of us want to upset ourselves, so we don't read or listen to those who talk about things that we find, you know, upsetting. But I also think there's an issue of our language has been really kind of infected. And one of the things, I'm writing a new book right now about this, about how the language is being hijacked. And I think it's important to understand. I was doing an interview the other day, and the person asked me to specifically note an incident where President Trump was being slandered. And I said, well, one of the things you have to realize is it's not so much that there's a particular incident, it's accumulation of slanted news and what I call pejorative language. So you can read newspapers and magazines and all these things, and for all intents and purposes, you're just reading about the news. But if you read between the lines and you listen very closely to the language that is used, it's often very pejorative, biased, and slanted. And that is where I think the opinion can be moved on the needle on opinion, our national opinion, can be moved relatively easily over a long period of time. It's easy to have your opinions influenced when you really don't even think you're being influenced. And this is something that's very subtle, but I think it's insidious.
Well, and I think the worst thing that bothers me is that, I mean, we've talked about the press, the media, and academia purporting these beliefs, but celebrities are all of a sudden the experts in our political arena. Why is that? How come? And I heard somebody say this yesterday. I thought this was very poignant. These people who are actors and singers, musicians, they think that they should be able to tell us how to vote, but you don't see doctors and plumbers and truck drivers thinking that they should be able to tell us how to vote.
Well, this is another aspect of what I call the Franken media, and that is where we've got the blurring of lines between entertainment and information. You know, back in the day, and I hate to keep referring to that because it makes me sound like an old man, but I do have a perspective, I believe. I have a degree in radio and television production, and I was studying the media in the 60s. I'm part of the Marshall McLuhan student. And one of the problems we have is our priorities as a society, as a culture, have changed. You know, in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, working was very, very important, and men in particular defined themselves by their job. And it was very a serious matter about what you did for a living, how hard you worked. And everything kind of revolved around your job. And then on the weekends or sometimes in the evenings or occasionally for a vacation, we entertained ourselves. Now it's gone the opposite way. Now we define ourselves by how we entertain ourselves. And we spend most of our time being entertained and little as possible time working. And so what's happened is the lines between entertainment and serious discussion have been blurred, and part of this is because of the variety of access to information that we have, but also the variety of access to entertainment that we have. We have it in our hand. We have it in a cell phone. We have it in our ear with wireless, earphones and all this different stuff that we have access to. We sit in front of a computer with thousands of points of interest that we can look at, and now we're having a hard time defining who's in charge of all this? Who are the experts? Now, we've had, I remember Jane Fonda was commenting on the Vietnam War, and she became kind of a pariah because of it. But she didn't have any problem with, talking about her opposition to the Vietnam War, and she probably had a lot of people that agreed with her. And I think that was really one of the founding periods of time when all of a sudden celebrities realized they can influence people. And so now we have celebrities that, for whatever reason, think that they're important enough that they should comment on national political issues. And the people out there that are so involved in entertainment give them a lot of value. And so now you'll see during campaigns, most of these candidates are going to find somebody, some celebrity, to endorse them and speak for them because it moves a lot of votes. So it's really quite simple. When you think about it, it's just a matter of how do you influence people, and the entertainment industry is a very powerful force.
Well, so Rick Elkin, author of Trump's Reckoning, Bulldozing Progressivism, Rebuilding Americanism. What do we do then when we've got a large segment of the population that is extremely emotionally motivated by maybe one issue or just simply they just hate the president, so it doesn't matter what happens there. They're not going to listen. They're not going to discuss. I mean, how do we get a large percentage of the population to at least look more objectively at things and less subjectively, or can we?
Well, it's a tough challenge. There's no question, especially since conservatives are treated like, you know, infidels. But I think one of the ways to do that is through the economy. And I think one of the things that Trump has done by unleashing our economy has made a lot of people think twice about previous administrations and policies and all of the regulation of capitalism. And then I think we have to go back to our schools and redefine what our schools' roles are in raising our children and whether or not we really want to venerate capitalism. Because this has really been the target of our schools, is to tear down capitalism and point out to the students that it's an unfair system. So everything seems to vacillate around fairness and social justice nowadays. And I think this is something that we have to, as a culture, we have to relook at. And that's going to be a difficult thing to do. Parents are spending $40,000 and $60,000 a semester to send their kids to these schools that are turning around and indoctrinating their children. Only when those parents realize what's going on will they intervene and maybe withhold their money and start teaching their children in a different way. I think this is what, you know, we need to let the market work. And most of that comes through capitalistic efforts, and let our economy, once the economy is cooking like it is right now, people have jobs, they're more open. They're more open to thinking differently and looking at things a little bit differently. And I think part of the reason that the country has gone so far left is because we went through some really tough times right after 9/11. Everything started to come unraveled. And I've made the case in my first book, Turn Right at Loss, that America suffered PTSD, and for a decade, we were unwilling or unable to accept the fact that we had been seriously hurt by a force of terrorism that was out to get us, and that's something we've never had to deal with since World War II, and our generation and our kids' generations never really had to deal with that, so we didn't, and instead, we tried to avoid even dealing with it.
Let's hope we can sustain the economy and keep growing and prosperity. Maybe we'll take care of a lot of problems, we hope. Rick, how can we get a copy of your book?
Well, it's available on Amazon and Borders and most of the online bookstores. And also they can go to my website, rickelkin.com, and you can follow me there and access all of my books.
All right. Rick Elkin, the book is Trump's Reckoning, Bulldozing Progressivism, Rebuilding Americanism. Thanks for sharing your time with us this morning.
Tim, I really appreciate it. Thank you, and Happy New Year.
All right. Same to you.